Recordings have now started. Please go ahead.
Lovely. Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone on today's Jazz Call on Tuesday, the 1st of June. We have Avery Doria, Evan Leibovich, Alex Gakuru, Tijani Benjima, Rafik Damak, Sébastien Bachelet, Andrew Mack, Elaine Fries, Baudouin Chombe, Carlos Aguirre, Alan Greenberg. From staff, we have Olaf Nordling, Glenda Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And Olga Cavalli will be joining us late. I hope I haven't forgotten anyone. We're still trying to dial up to Richard Tindall, and Tony Harris is on the call as well. Sorry about that. If I could also please remind everyone to press *6 and *6 unmute if your line is noisy, and please state your names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Evan.
Okay. All right. First thing on the agenda is an update from ALAC regarding the charter. So in the last little while, we've now had two votes, one from GNSO, one from ALAC regarding the charter. Carlos, do you have anything to mention regarding the ALAC vote on the charter? Carlos, are you there? Okay. Alan and Sebastian, would somebody who was at the ALAC meeting care to report on the activity regarding the JAS group at the ALAC meeting?
Evan, it's Alan. I didn't, to be honest, I'm having a blank out here, but I'm pretty sure we did approve it. But I need to go back and check the record. I don't think we did not approve it, so I think we did. But
it's Sebastian. We approved it, and the discussion was about which version we may take.
Right.
It was very difficult to find on the GNSO. What it was sent to us was with four items, and in fact, it seems, I hope, that we finally have the good version with five items. Do you, Olaf, did you give this information to ID, that it's the one with five items to be taken into account? But anyway, it was approved by ALAC, but we need to be sure which one version is the right.
Okay. Now that's coming back. Thank you, Sebastian. Yes, the one posted on the GNSO website and the one posted under the GNSO motions said they approved the one with four. Several people said they approved the one with five, and the one posted was wrong. So we have approved the one with four. We need to go back and fix that if indeed the one approved by the GNSO was the one with five sections. But in concept, we've approved it.
This is Olaf here, and
Olaf, Carlos is here.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead. Sorry. I have in a silence my phone. I want to give the inform about ALAC, but I saw that Sebastian and Alan said about that, but the update from ALAC is that in the last teleconference last week on Tuesday, we approved unanimously the charter of the last working group as GNSO Council approved before. So it's a great notice, I think, for the working group. Just it's what I want to say about ALAC updates. You understand?
Yes, but Olaf, can you confirm which version the GNSO did approve?
Oh, they did approve the five objectives version, indeed. And, well, I also got a confirmation. We had an exchange with Heidi, so she has confirmed for me that it was approved. So I think we're home free. And we do have a charter.
So the one that's on the Adobe Connect screen right now is the current one that has been passed by both GNSO and AWAC now.
But Olaf, has that been changed on the GNSO motions page?
As of
the meeting last week, it was still showing the one with four sections.
Oh, well, all right. That has to be then rectified. I'll talk to Glenn about that, and we see that we sort that. But it was indeed the case that, and I did specifically read out the Objective 2 verbatim at the GNSO Council meeting to make it perfectly clear. So they have it's on record.
Okay.
So we should, if that's the case, we'll sort that out. I'll take that as an action point.
So if necessary, the ALAC will go back and amend, but I think we need to presume that it was approved at this point. If we need have some housekeeping to do, we will do that.
All right. And I also take that as an action point to, on the wiki, to change the draft charter to charter. That's an easy change.
Yes, the version sent by me for Rafik was the version with four objectives. In the wiki, the version is with five objectives. ALAC approved the version sent by me by Rafik.
That's right, and therefore we may need to go back and fix that. Look, I don't think this work group should worry about that at this point.
Okay.
Okay. Have we beaten that one to death yet?
I hope so.
Okay. So I think we can move on to the next one. And so with that, so like I said, what that means is that the one that is currently on display in the Adobe Connect room is the one that has appeared to have been passed by all sides. Okay, next on the agenda, moving into Work Team 1, update on developments. There have been some lively email discussions over the last little while on some of the issues regarding the cost recovery, and it seems like it is a good opportunity here to try and continue these. Because if we can get some general agreement, we may actually have some we may have some consensus here. On the issue of cost recovery, this is something that Richard started and that Tony and others have been discussing. There is the issue of whether or not we would recommend that the quote-unquote sunk costs perhaps be waived for needy applicants. And while on one hand it is, I think the term that was used in the email is that it's a nuanced approach to cost recovery, and the idea being that the sunk costs perhaps, some of the new applicants, especially the needier ones, shouldn't have to pay financially for it every time ICANN decides it wants to do a new study or create another IRT group that has to be knocked down and built up again. Richard, do you want to start the ball rolling with it? Richard?
Is Richard on the call? He's not on Adobe Connect, and last I heard they were still calling out to him.
Okay. Tony, would you like to start the ball rolling with that?
Well, actually, I'm catching up on these emails. I only just got into the office. I had no access since yesterday evening, so I'm rapidly trying to read the different comments. Is anybody else on the call who submitted a comment who would like to say something meanwhile?
Elaine, you've been involved with it.
To Johnny.
Yeah, perhaps I'd like to say something while I'm trying to read quickly through what they said.
Well, Tijani's got his hand up, so while you're reading, Tijani, go ahead.
Yes, okay, thank you. I commented on the Tony inputs, saying that the Resolution 20 talked about the application costs and the ongoing costs. So we are not obliged to consider the whole program cost. So I think that the risk cost and the development cost wouldn't be considered for us.
So you're suggesting to Johnny that this be something that is waived for needy applicants or for our applicants?
At least for our applicants.
Okay.
Since the Resolution 20 is for those applicants. You understand?
Okay. Yes.
So basically,
Johnny,
I'm sorry to jump in.
I'm confused by what you just said.
Hold on.
I
hear Olaf, and Alan's got his hand up, and I heard one other voice.
This is Tony. Could I just respond to what Johnny said?
Go ahead.
It's very, very short. I agree with what he said. And just to make it very brief, in the comment I sent up, that would be the first option.
Yeah.
No development costs and no risk costs. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Alan, you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would not agree with the wording that Tijani used on two counts. Number one, the way that the application costs and recovery of costs has been described in the various documents, the recovery of the sunk cost is part of the application, overall cost of the application processing. So I would not say it doesn't apply because the board resolution omitted it. I believe the board resolution, the implication was, and we can certainly check on whether that was the meaning, but the implication was that the $185,000 stays. I think we have a strong case for why ICANN should waive the sunk costs in this case, just like, you know, I have a copy of some software on my desk from a private company that has an educational and nonprofit price, which is very much below the regular commercial price. So I think we have a good argument for that. But saying it doesn't count, it didn't count in the board resolution, I believe, and we can perhaps check that with staff and interpretation, that was not meant to it. In terms of the risk costs, despite the name risk, it is not a description of risks associated with particular applications, but trying to put a measure on the costs which could not be determined through traditional cost analysis methodology. And calling it the risk cost, I think, gives us a false sense of security. It is part of the cost that they are expecting to pay, averaged over all of the applications. And if we were asking that to be reduced, I think we need a good argument, not just saying it's risk that doesn't apply, because that isn't how they did the calculation.
Okay. So, Alan, just to follow this up a little more. So you're agreeing that we should ask to waive it, but that we shouldn't ask for it simply on the grounds that there's less risk. There might be other rationale behind asking to waive it, but simply saying, okay, it's a risk fund and there's less risk, probably won't fly.
No, because even if that was 100% true, they still averaged all of them, and therefore lowering one group's cost increases the other, based on the cost recovery model, whereas the sunk cost comes out of a different part of the pot, which is why I suggested it in the first place.
So, Alan, are you suggesting that we not ask for a reduction of the quote, I'll call it quote-unquote risk costs?
Well, I can't come up with a good rationale why we're in a strong position to do that, at least not until we have the definitive list of the qualifications of the groups we're looking at, where maybe we can craft some sort of wording. I'm not saying we don't ask for it. I just don't know what the right words are, and I don't think the ones that have been used, just presuming it is the cost associated with high-risk applications, is going to sway a lot of people.
Okay.
We're only likely to have one kick at this can. We need to have the argument strong.
So is this mainly an issue of
voice? Can I get in queue?
Yes, I've got Andrew in the queue, and Alan, you won't...
I'll put my hand up.
Okay, to Jenny, are you in with something new, or can...
Yes, Ivan.
Can I let Andrew speak first, since he hasn't gone yet? So, Andrew, go ahead.
Sure, thank you. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay, the last speaker was Alan, right?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay, Alan, so what I'm hearing you say is that the risk cost is effectively insurance, right?
No.
And because that's the way it sounded when you were describing it.
No, it is not. It is the result of a rather complex mathematical calculation, including probability studies, and to try to put a price on the things that they do not have a good handle on. One of the largest aspects, for instance, was the total number of applications. The calculations were all based on a calculation of 500.
Uh-huh.
But they may get 200, in which case some of the fixed costs have to be split over fewer users, over fewer applicants. And there are other things where they simply did not have enough information in the cost of outside consulting in some of the cases, that they had to use probability to try to determine what it might be based on the distributions that they could estimate. It's not pure risk, it's the risk in doing the calculation properly.
Well, that's a fascinatingly gymnastic answer. I'm impressed what they've done, but it still sounds like insurance to me. It's insurance. It's basically a downside risk insurance that says if there are fewer applications, we're going to have a reserve that will allow us to make sure that this process pays for itself, right?
Well, but as I read the document, and it's there for anyone to read, it includes a component of that, but it also, they could have said that X part of the process is going to cost us $1 million, and then we have a risk on top of that of an extra $500,000. I believe what they did is put the $1.5 million in there.
So they've lumped together.
So in other words, it's the whole things that included risk.
Okay.
So that's how I understand it. That's just my reading.
No. I'm asking to try. You clearly have spent some time wrestling with this. What I'm trying to do is to figure out. I agree with what you're saying in that it's going to be difficult to just wipe that risk calculation away. The way that we might be able to address it is to go and say, well, this risk pool is actually based around two or three different calculations, which have all been bunched together, and perhaps it's possible for needy applicants to get to waive out of or to step up into some part of that without necessarily needing to go for the entire thing. That's all I was trying to get at.
That might be a stronger argument than the original one.
I think just as much as I would like to say that we would, as much as I would like to say that we should find a way for needy applicants to just walk away from this, I think that will be a hard sell within the community. And so maybe if we could thin slice it a little bit, that would be one suggestion. As far as the development costs, the sunk costs, I think that's an easier argument to make, in part because the sunk costs I think you can make the argument that some of the sunk costs are related to things that would not be touching the communities that we're trying to support. So I don't know if people agree with that, but it strikes me that that is a much easier argument to make, a much more coherent one.
Well, it's an argument. Just one more thing. It's an argument which ICANN is making on a regular basis. This year, the financial situation is not as good as we'd hoped. How we're covering at least part of it is we're not going to put as much in the reserve as we planned. I mean, it's a regular event to cover financial issues.
Okay, is this an issue of? From what I'm gathering from the discussion between the two of you, this is an issue that might be one of wordsmithing. Or is it deeper than that?
At the very least, it is.
I guess, Evan, I think that there's a substantive piece, which is that you can make an argument for excuse me, you could make an argument that, the needy applicants wouldn't need to, shouldn't be responsible for sunk costs, but because of the nature of those the applications, there is some risk associated with them. And as a result, I think it would be harder to pass through. I'm just trying to think about what's practical. It would be harder to make the argument that they shouldn't have some, that some sort of risk calculation shouldn't be included in their applications. Make sense? So I would be dividing up those two. And then even within the risk calculations, maybe since they were all, from what I understand, placed in one basket, maybe there's a way to subdivide that basket to get us away from risks that wouldn't necessarily hit our communities.
Okay. So maybe perhaps an answer is to go offline after this call and have, you know, people on the WT1 group sort of butt heads and try and figure out some wording and some ways to slice and dice this that might make it more acceptable. To Jenny, you've been extremely patient. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Evan. It was possible for me to reply to the disagreement of Alan when he was talking, but the rule for me is to raise hand first and the chair give the floor. Thank you, Alan. Thank you, Evan. So I wanted to say that we have a text, which is the Resolution 20, and I don't think that it is normal to say perhaps they don't mean that, perhaps they mean that. If the whole group here think that the meaning of this resolution is not only the application fees and only the ongoing fees, the ongoing costs, we have to ask the board itself. It's possible. But I think that we need to interpret the text without a lot of suspicion, if you want. We have to interpret it normally, and it's written clearly, I think. So, but once more, if the whole group here think that it is not clear and we need more clarification, we have to write to the board itself. I don't think that we have to be afraid to do proposition. We are asked from the board to propose how we can make support. So if we are really afraid, and perhaps it is not this, no, we read what is written. We try to understand and we try to work according to this text. That's all.
To Jenny, do we have the luxury of time of being able to go back to the board and ask for clarification? I mean, we're under a bit of a time crunch, and I can imagine that the back and forth of going back for clarification from the board may be a significant delay here. Do we have that luxury of time?
Even I will answer this question. I have written what I said now, I think 1 week ago or perhaps more. If people who think that it is not the meaning of the resolution, I think they had to tell it in this time so that we have time to consult with the board. Now, at the last time, if we come back and say, no, it's not the meaning, perhaps it's not the meaning, I don't know. We will be blocked.
Okay, we've got a queue forming. Elaine, and then I've got Alan. But Alan, are you addressing this issue?
I was in the queue. Tony Harris.
Tony.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm still here. Evan, I was going to address what Tijani was saying, but Tony should go first, I would guess.
Somebody should cut that line out.
There's a busy tone on. Oh, okay.
Okay, good.
Should I go? This is
so going. So going back to the queue. Okay, Elaine, you're first in the queue. Are you addressing this issue?
Yes, thank you.
Go ahead.
So I'm reviewing the new out by ICANN yesterday, starting draft applicant guidebook and the cost. What I'm hearing in this discussion is that we're looking at two different sort of fees that we might be able to request be waived for our applicants, which are resulting in some cost at $25K, and then risk mitigation fees, which are about $60,000 per applicant. And so what I see in this document that's just called the new GTLD budget, 28th of May 10 PDF, it says that they're expecting round one will take 18 months to complete, and then round two is expected to open 12 months after. So I'm wondering if anybody has an idea if these development and sunk costs will only apply to round one applicants, and if we need to consider that our applicants might be benefiting from the round two applications at the minus $25K.
So you're saying as a consequence of coming in at the lower price that perhaps some of the needy applicants should wait for the next round?
Well, I think that's sort of, the obvious logic in what's being published here. But I don't know if these development costs are going to be spread over round one, round two, round three. Does anybody have an indication of that, or are all the development costs being recovered in the first round?
Yeah, I can answer that when I get up, Evan.
Well, you're next, Alan. So, Elaine, do you have anything more? Or is that...
No, thank you.
Okay, Alan,
The intent was that the known costs at the time the fee was developed were to be totally absorbed by the first round. Therefore, there's a risk, what we're calling the risk, which I like to call just the fuzzy part of the calculation, would to some extent cover that if it was an incorrect estimate. However, since the costs have increased radically since that calculation was done, we spent another year and a half that we weren't forecasting would be spent. I suspect at round two they will add yet another part of sunk costs in, which they hadn't forecast at the first go-round. So waiting for the second round may not be the guarantee because of that, even though the intent was to sink the costs. They may not all have been covered, and there may be more added. In terms of consulting the board, on the vertical integration thing, the motion of the board was even fuzzier, and the vertical integration group did ask the board. After the board finally met, and the board only meets once a month, the next time they meet is in Brussels at the end of the meeting, they came back and said, we're not telling you anymore. And finally yesterday, the staff interpretation of it came out in DAG 4. And, for instance, it interpreted zero ownership across ownership to be 2%, or less than 2%. So I think it is fair to ask staff what the interpretation is. We may get a quicker answer than that. Asking the board will take at least to the end of Brussels. And probably we'll get back an answer saying we said what we said.
But, Alan, it's not, I mean, obviously staff has been interpreting things, but, I mean, we'll have a much harder time challenging something that the board made explicit than something that the staff guessed at.
I think in the terms of the sunk costs, we just assume that this is something we can argue for and not ask for an interpretation ahead of asking. And the same for the fuzzy costs, for the risk or the fuzzy costs, but I just want to make sure that our argument is strong so it doesn't get rejected out of hand.
Okay. I've got Avery next, even though her hand's been lowered in the Adobe Connect. We're getting on to more than halfway into the call.
Did you have Tony?
Wasn't Tony
did you
on
have
the
Tony
call?
Harris before me?
Well, he's not in the Adobe Connect. Tony, are you on the call?
Well, yes, actually, but I'm quite happy to wait until Avery's finished.
Okay.
Thank you, Avery.
Avery, you go, then Tony. And I hand things off over to WT2.
Okay. First off, I'm not sure that we need to rush to WT2 on this. We need to sort of get some resolution here. I think Alan's right in terms of going to the board for the confirmation. I think at this point that doesn't make sense. Sort of a machine went on beside me, so I moved. I think what we really need to think about is putting together a proposal to the best of our understanding of what we want to propose to them. I think that this can be a sketchy one. I think part of this comes back in the ending talk of what we're, you know, we have on this is, you know, what we're going to talk about in Brussels, because if we have a sketchy idea of a proposal, it can be discussed there. We can then get board feedback, as one often does in the sort of informal board sense. And so that can happen. I think we do need to make a decision here is we often have notions coming up of, well, you know, they can wait until the second round. And in terms of many of the things that we might propose, I think, yeah, waiting until the second round will be it. Certainly, you know, any sort of fundraising and helping those things, the WT2 things, some of those may be second round. But I don't think that we want to necessarily jump at the notion of W2. And then, I mean, of round two. And then the other thing I wanted to ask is, has anyone explored the notion of whether it's appropriate when speaking about aiding people in development areas to have them paying sort of the sunken costs of a process that, A, they haven't necessarily been totally part of and don't have major inclusion in and just beginning to have inclusion in, and B, those sunk costs are sort of a notion of an incumbent cost of this massive organization that we're talking about, a development need to get them into. Is it appropriate? And that's just a question I'm asking. Is that something that, you know, somehow seems wrong to ask people in development regions to pay for the expenses of an ICANN sunken cost? So that was all I wanted to ask. Thanks.
Well, just to follow up on that, Avery, I'd like to try and explore what Elaine was saying and what you followed up on and saying, well, if the ICANN assumption is that the sunken costs are going to be recovered by this round, then can we perhaps work under the assumption that if we ask for some of these to go under a subsequent round, providing ICANN doesn't take forever to get to that subsequent round, that those sunken costs will be covered off and no longer an issue in the fees for a subsequent round. I mean, what does everyone think about that? Yeah, Alan made the point. The sunken in Adobe Connect, the sunken costs as we knew them when the fee was determined.
As they knew them,
it could even go higher if we continue to drag this out. Tony, go ahead.
That's okay. I think you were trying to sum this up very well. Just a couple of things that I heard on previous comments. I'm not uncomfortable with using the term risk cost, because actually ICANN uses it in their document. They define it as risk cost. The second thing is, if you look at the definition, risk costs means uncertain costs and costs that are harder to predict, or risks including unanticipated costs, such as variations between estimates and actual costs incurred. Well, that's a very elegant waffle, but I mean, the development costs are not so much them, but the evaluation component of the cost of the fee, which is close to $100,000, in my opinion, is generously padded to to address any, you know, any shortcoming which the risk cost is supposed to be doing. And secondly, if I recall correctly, the consulting entity that recommended this $60,000 fee that worked out in the average was, unless I misrecall, an insurance specialist. So it does seem to have been devised with the concept of an insurance environment, okay? I would also like to congratulate Alex Kakul on his submission, where he says, I believe we should make all the recommendations that the working group feels would be beneficial for the target applicants, and then leave the board to adopt or reject as per their best judgment. I do feel, with all due respect, that we are exhibiting an awful lot of concern of what ICANN may think about what we will say, and we're also worried about will they have enough money. And I mean, that baffles me. What the application fee costs. I mean, that should set anybody's mind at ease about ICANN being short of money. But well, that's just my opinion on this. And I do think that Tijani's point should be included. There's no time to go to the board, obviously. And if this misinterpretation is not what the board intended, well, what will happen? They'll tell us, we didn't mean that. It's as easy as that, really. Well, that's what I have so far.
Okay, that probably will need some expansion into email. I mean, considering we have less than 20 minutes left in this call. No, sorry, this is a 90-minute call. Oh, sorry. So we've got more time to expand on this. Is this something that perhaps we can get a little bit more specific on? I mean, I think I agree with you that trying to read the board's mind is probably problematic, and that we should try and not assume what the board was thinking and that we got a mandate. I have Andrew's hand up first, and then Tijani, and then Alan. Andrew?
Yes. I wanted to go back to what Avery said. I think that the point that she brings up is a very good one, which is to say that an awful lot of that were I an applicant from an underserved part of the world, I frankly wouldn't feel that it was appropriate for me to be paying for the sunk costs that really had very little, if anything, to do with me. And I think that's an argument that we're going to hear, and I think it's an argument that will reflect what is basic fairness in my mind. One of the questions that I had was about this sense of timing. Are we assuming that everything that we do will affect only the second round or some sort of a second round? If that's the case, that gives us a slightly larger amount of room to work, but we've got to be careful because I can see it just as easily happening where they go after the first round and for whatever reason it doesn't go as they expect, and then they come back and say, oh, no, our sunk costs are bigger, or, oh, no, I've got more, you know, we've got more risk expenses than we had expected, and the applicants in the second part of this may actually have a harder time. So I think it's very, very important that we put down some sort of rule that says, regardless of what happens in the first round, here's what we're expecting in the second round. Does that make sense, everyone?
My only concern with that, and Andrew, what is your consideration about the time it's going to take to get to a second round?
You know, I don't have a clear sense of that. I'd love to get other people's thoughts. And whether a second round will be clearly demarcated from the first round or whether this will become more of a kind of an ongoing process, I don't know that either. What I am concerned about is that we don't want to kick the can too far down the road because, you know, for example, related to this idea of trying to find funding, I can see it very easily being a situation where we say, yes, we've come up with a good solution, and now great, they'll form a committee and go off and try and find funding, which might or might not ever happen. And I think that would kind of march away from what we're trying to do. I think we want to try and keep it as simple as possible and keep this process integrated into the broader process.
Okay. To Jenny and then Alan. To Jenny, go.
Yes. Yes, thank you, Evan. I support 100% what Tony said, and I think that we have to make recommendations regardless what will be accepted and what will be rejected. Second point, we don't have to think about the second round, because the second round has other circumstances, and we don't know what will happen till there. So what we are doing now is for this round, not for the second round.
Okay. All right, so everything we're talking about is immediate, and then what happens in the second round gets discussed in the second round. Okay. All right, Alan, I have you next. And
yep.
Since I don't have the ability, could anyone who's raised their hand in Adobe Connect please lower it when they're done? Because I don't have the ability to do that right now. Alan, you're next.
Okay, several things. In terms of the timing, we just heard that they're expecting the first round to take a year and a half to process, and then a delay of about a year before the second round. Therefore, we will have lots of time to have this discussion regarding the second round based on real facts that we understand from the first round. So I would not worry about the second round at this point. It's going to be a different game. There may well be some landfall profits or windfall profits because of auctions at that we'll know about by then. It's a very different world we're looking at, so I wouldn't agonize at this point about the details. In terms of when will the rounds be and will they be rounds or steady state, ICANN has ongoing basis said that they will batch applicants, that the process is too expensive to do one by one as they dribble in, and there's always the potential for competition between them, so they will be in batches or rounds, presumably on an ongoing steady state basis after that, but there always will be rounds. At least that's what the intent was so far. In terms of reading the board's mind, I don't want my expressions, my wording to be misunderstood. I'm not saying read their minds and therefore don't ask for what they didn't mean. We want to ask for everything we think is potentially viable, but by reading their minds and trying to figure out what they meant, we can craft our arguments to try to convince them to do something different than they may have originally meant. So it's not a matter of whether we ask for something or not, but it's how we craft the arguments.
Okay. Is that all, Alan, any more?
No, that's it.
Okay. I want to go back to Elaine, since you mentioned we were the first one to mention the idea of punting certain things or considering certain things for a second round. What's your take on the response you've heard?
Yeah, my concern about asking for the sunk cost to be waived for our applicants in the first round is that if ICANN is planning on not recovering any sunk costs in the second round, it could easily come back with, well, why do your applicants need to go in this first round? Why don't they wait till second round when we know that things will be less expensive because we don't have these cost to recover. So I'm just trying to follow that line of thinking, and actually I think we should answer that question, why do our applicants need to go in?
Can I get in queue? I'm not on Adobe. Tony Harris.
Go ahead. But actually, Elaine, more to add, or Elaine, do you have more to add, or
No, that's all.
Go ahead, Tony.
Yes, I just wanted to say, if we think about a second round, I mean, at the end of the day, the distance between the last round of TLDs, which was in 2004, and perhaps the new round, I'm saying perhaps because we have no idea if it will be next year or not, by my count, if it's next year, it would be 7 years. I wouldn't be surprised if we have more overarching issues that come out of the process of the initial round, which will then which may well then push a second round into, well, who knows how many years up the road. And that would not necessarily mean that the second round would be cheaper. Anything could happen. I mean, you could have 50 applications instead of 500, and then ICANN would really be in financial problems. So I think it's a little risky to make any plans on a second round because we have no idea what might happen.
That echoes what Alan has said in the Adobe chat area, where he said that we can't assume that the sunk cost. Okay, we got somebody with a very noisy line. I was just mentioning Alan has said in Adobe Connect we can't assume that the sunk costs in round two will be gone or even less than that we have now. So I think you're right that we can't make that assumption. I have Avery in the queue and then Sebastian.
Thank you. Yeah, just two quick points. I think that the board's motion, and I know I said things were obvious in the VI one, and I'm going to say that again here. I think, and I'm sorry, I'm the one that's in a noisy place. I think the board's notion talks, the board's motion talks about the current GTLD program and wanting it to be fair. So I think to sort of say, well, they meant not this round, but the future one would be to mangle the notion of the present and what is means. The other thing that we have to consider is, we don't necessarily have to consider, but one thing that I look at is in terms of looking at these costs, in terms of looking at the notion of basically covering the costs of the whole application process and the notions of fairness, one of the arguments that perhaps this group can make is an across-the-board argument that sort of says those sunken costs don't belong in the price. And individuals have made this claim before, and yes, they've made it unsuccessfully, but perhaps there is an argument that an ACSO working group on this issue can review it and can, if it wishes, make that argument now. And, I'm not suggesting we go as far as the CCTLDs and make it all voluntary, whether you pay those sunken costs or not. However, I think one could make an argument. And then it's not a preferential treatment. It's just that by helping the development players and the development applicants, one helps everyone. Thank you. And we probably should move on after other people that have their hands up. Then we should move on to WT2. Thank you.
Okay. I have Sebastian in the queue. Is there anybody else that wants to get into the queue right now, speak now, or Sebastian has the last word before we go to WT2? What I would like to do is I'd like to see a couple of people, at very least Alan and Alex, since you guys started things at the beginning, about let's go offline and see if we can craft craft some wording about what we want, so it deals with some of the issues and concerns that you guys had at the very top of this call regarding, the nuances of things and how we can word things in such a way that we're dealing with the board's own rationale. So I would like to take some of that into the mailing list. Sebastian, you have the last word.
Okay, it was difficult to get mute off. Sorry. I wanted to support what Tony say, and with the example of this round of TLD with 7 years, we never know when the second round of this type, if it will come, and if any second round of this type will come. It's one of the reasons it's so difficult today to explain to people that what they can do, because it must be that it's the last chance to have new GTLD. And it's not just a joke what I am saying here. My other point is that I still feel I don't understand how you each year I can have a budget and spend money to develop a program, and they want to recover this cost. It's like when the new entrants came for the telephony, we will have asked each one of them to pay for the landline invest by the each state and the all the telco in the country. And I am sorry to repeat that, but because it's not a good deal today for all the GTLD projects and specifically for the one we are discussing here. Thank you very much.
Okay. On that note, I'll work with staff and Avery afterwards to try and come out with a sort of action plan on how we take this and try and gel it into some wording. In the meantime, we got half an hour left in the call, and Avery, over to you on WT2.
Okay, thank you. And yeah, I think, and adding a thing there, I think what's important for us is to have on both WT1 and WT2 a sense of what we're talking about and what we're thinking of proposing that we can talk on Brussels. Now, in terms of what's remaining of the agenda, we've got the WT2 update on developments, WT2 discussion, and then we have scheduling and preparation of a Brussels meeting, and I want to make sure that we allow that. We have any other business, and I don't know if anybody has any, but I want to make sure we have time for that, if it's there. On WT2, in terms of following the discussions that were on the mailing list, there seem to be two things covered, and one I'd like to ask Elaine to talk a little bit more about, and that's the COCA, and especially I think it's important to understand what it means in relation to minds and machines and how that might be helpful to people. And then the other thing that was discussed was sort of the size of an applicant as a criteria, and I think that that got a fair amount of exercise and wasn't, people I think eventually decided it wasn't the size that counted, but I'd like to hear from people in that group. And then I think there starts to be a little bit more discussion about what other criteria one could have, but it hasn't been developed yet. And then there was also a little bit of discussion about, and this mixed with the COCA, and I'm not sure I'm pronouncing it correctly, initiative that talked about technical assistance and other things like that. And the other thing I'd like to add to the discussion is anybody that's had time to read DAG, V4, does it change anything that we're talking about here? So I don't see any hands yet. Is there someone who perhaps, Elaine, you could start sort of covering the COCA issues and then find out if there are others that want to add to the WT2 developments discussion first?
Sure. So last week we talked about looking at our applicants sharing infrastructure and different resources as a way of minimizing their costs. And I talked about COCA, which is the Council of Country Code Administrators, as a model. COCA has more than 20 small CCLDs and some larger ones that share registry software. Sometimes they share hosting in a secure NOC network operations center. If in their own country, like Haiti, for instance, they don't have a stable uplink to the internet, or they don't have IPv6 technology, or whatever might be required. So there's already a model in place where registry operators are sharing resources and technology. And so I was asked to check with the director of COCA and see if they would consider adding our applicants into their charter. Currently, their charter, they only serve CCTLD operators. And the response from the director was they are happy to help small, not-for-profit, non-commercial applicants directly and treat them as they do the CCTLDs if they're not commercially of interest to minds and machines. So there's two things there. We need to figure out what small, not-for-profit, non-commercial applicants mean. And we also need to look at what's commercially of interest. Now, Minds and Machines has an exclusive license to use the registry software for the new GTLDs. And so, you know, at first look, that would eliminate our applicants because supposedly they're looking for a new GTLD. But I think there's some wiggle room having one foot in both worlds in, at COCA and Minds and Machines. I think we can make a space for our applicants in this model. So right now I've written a proposal and it's being discussed internally at Minds and Machines that we would consider replicating the COCA model for new GTLD applicants that, you know, have met the criteria that we've laid out in this working group. So that's in the process. But the other part of that is not only do we need to look at COCA and Minds and Machines, but this is also something that can be done by any other registry operator. If you look at Afilias, for instance, they use the same technology and hardware for more than one TLD. So this is something that any operator can do. And so I asked in another email that we put out a request for providers to let us know if they're interested in supporting our applicants in this way, not only to our applicants, writing the application and translating documents, interpreting things, building a business plan, but they also need, probably are going to need, the technology that meets the very strict requirements that are laid out in the DAG. So that's basically what's happened in my email series. I'd like to hear some comments on the idea of the proposal that we would, through ICANN, ISOC, WSIS, INTA, ISP trade groups, CCTLD supporting organizations, anybody else we can think of, basically just publish our charter and list the types of support we have and ask people to reply to us and let us know if they're interested in what services they could provide, since I think that's objective. Three or four?
Elaine, your line is breaking up. I don't know if you know.
Now, can you hear me now?
Yep, and we were getting some crosstalk also.
Okay, yeah, so basically I just would like us to discuss the idea of reaching out to potential applicants and potential providers to find out not only what sort of support that they can identify as what they need, but also who those providers might be.
This is Aubrey. I don't see any hands up yet, so I would like people to come in with comments. I have one question on Minds and Machines doing this. To what extent does this is this a sort of giving back to the community, and to what extent is this a bringing people in as customers? Or I didn't get a notion on how those things were divided. And such, is this a free program? If somebody was with another registry service provider, that didn't offer this service, would Minds and Machines still be providing this assistance? Just curious.
Yeah. So this, we haven't fully discussed this within Minds and Machines. It's sort of just, you know, as we're looking at our criteria and who our applicants might be, we're also at Minds and Machines talking about whether or not this is of interest to us. And back in Nairobi, we had talked quite a bit about offering this idea that, you know, there was a lot of talk about some applicants being excluded from this process because they might not have the technology that was necessary to get through. So we were actually at that point ready to make a public statement that we were willing to provide the technical side of things on a cost recovery basis. which would be outside of our commercial interests. Minds and Machines is definitely a commercial entity that is for profit, and it's, you know, it's not in our business model really to give away our services for free. But if we also want to give back to the community, and that's one of the reasons why we are very supportive of COGA, is because they've done a fantastic job of doing that. So it's definitely something that we're talking about. We don't have any sort of defined parameters of who we would help and under what circumstances. I think that needs to come from our working group, where we propose to the ACC, and then the providers decide whether or not they want to assist and under what circumstances they would provide that assistance.
Okay, thank you. So in other words, we could recommend something like a clearinghouse with the registries to help the you know, the applicants, or anything that occurs to us to suggest. Thank you. Sebastian, you have your hand up.
Yes, I wanted to suggest that we need to set up a working group on horizontal integration and to very care about what we do in this area. It's, once again, not just a joke about vertical integration and horizontal integration, but I am a little bit anxious on what I heard about Minds and Machines, COCA, and that will work for the rest of the community. In the other hand, I think we need to have in mind what it's discussed in the vertical integration working group, because one of the way to have different type of business model and GTLDs, it's also to have different types of possible providers. And I know that there is not just Graysign and Ustar affiliates, other COCA it's one, but I am sure that some CCTLD have already offered, or will offer, or can offer some help in this area. And I would like very much that we not concentrate it in one possibility, but to see how we can leverage.
Sebastian, you need to speak up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I am very, very, very far. I will stop now because I am very far in French land and with very little boundaries. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay, no, the points were good, just people were having trouble hearing you, and that's why I interrupted. I didn't mean to stop you. Okay, I don't see any other hands up at the moment. Does anybody want to speak at it? I mean, I think that within WT2, okay, I see Andrew. I'll finish my statement and go to Andrew. I think within WT2, we've got a couple important issues. I think we have to get some notion of the criteria nailed down, and several people have been sort of saying this to me, because even for the work that WT1 is doing, unless we go for a blanket approach, we need to know what kind of, you know, not that criteria will necessarily give us a number, but it'll give us an idea of what we're dealing with. And two, I think we need to start writing down the bits and pieces of the components of any program. We've talked about technical assistance. We've perhaps talked about financial assistance. But in that, I've noticed, A, there's sort of a distaste for going for it, and B, there's a real, on some people's part, and B, there's a realism part that as part of a first round, that one may be a longer shot than it would be for a second round proposal. And of course, we've got the criteria. So, Andrew, over to you.
Sure. Thanks, Audrey. A couple things to summarize where we are with some of the conversations that we've had that I think were very good. We've identified 7 different possible areas of support. Fee reduction, subsidization, work with infrastructure, IPv6 compatible hardware and networks, education around DNSSEC implementation, translation of relevant documents, which is an early stage one, which a lot of people have mentioned to me, help with writing, getting through the process for the application, another one that people have very, very strong on, awareness and outreach to new potential applicants, and then some sort of possible technical waiver or step up such that an applicant might be able to come in and rather than having everything, all of their certifications ex ante work into them. Of those, they clearly, in my mind, fall into two different categories. One is a category of getting to the plate, if you will, or getting to the edge of the pool. The translation, the help with the process, and awareness and outreach to new applicants that might be done, especially in underserved or historically underserved markets. So if that's helpful in terms of batching them together. One of the questions that I had is, we also had this group A and B, the A group being ethnic and linguistic communities, about which we thought there would be relatively little controversy, and then a secondary group being nonprofits and others who might make the case that they were underserved. And I think that the consensus of the conversations that I have had and we have seen is that A group might be the place for us to start. One of the questions that I have, though, is about the legal structure or juridical structure of the applicants themselves. There is an assumption that a lot of these, if not all of them, will be nonprofits. That may or may not be a good assumption. In my mind, I think it actually may not be an accurate assumption, if only because some of it may make more sense from a sustainability perspective to have things that might start as a nonprofit with the thought of morphing into a more of a for-profit model, depending on pickup, things like that. So I just wanted to throw those out as kind of a where we are, things that I think that we've pretty much agreed upon. But this idea that all of the applicants that we would be supporting would be now and forever nonprofits, I'm not sure that's one that may be worth revisiting. Anyway, some comments from my side.
Okay, thank you. I think also on the whole issue of nonprofit, that's very context defined in terms of how each country, how each region identifies what its companies and structures are. What I'd like to ask on this one is, you seem to have a very, not only a good list of things that are being considered, but also some putting them into sections notion. Is this something that's written up? Is this something that you and the others you've been speaking with are able to write up so that we have sort of the beginnings of a proposal that we could talk through at the next meeting that people could have read, that could be edited? And when I'm thinking of proposals for both WT1, and I guess there's already some writing on WT1 and on WT2, is then some things, we're not submitting them to the meeting because it's too late to do that, but to have something that basically has started to identify what it is that we're working towards. So is this something that you and others would be able to write up in the next couple of days?
Avery, I apologize, combination of the long weekend and a little bit of vacation. I hope to have it done before this meeting. So I will pull it out in the next couple of days with inputs from Carlos and anyone else who wants to add, and we'll try to get that out there as soon as possible.
Okay, that'd be fantastic, because if at the next meeting we can have the two proposals on the table, then we actually have something concrete to start, you know, working against and working for.
Mm-hmm.
Does anyone else have a comment on... Okay, Olaf, I see your hand. Please.
Very, very briefly. What I've done since we started this is to actually copy-paste the emails in the various threads, and I've collected them in what I call a scrapbook. Working team one and working team two. So I just wonder, would that be helpful to somebody or everybody if I send it around, or would it just muddle the waters? You all have the emails. It's nothing new in that, but I just tried to pool them together under working team one and working team two.
Okay, Olaf, I see one hand saying yes. I have to say, as someone who makes at least half of her living from writing synthesis reports, I have to believe that's a useful thing to be doing. So I would certainly appreciate seeing it. I see Alex has a check mark also, so I think that would be helpful. I think that the people that are writing up reports can then certainly refer to it. If they don't include something in theirs, we still have a record of it, and we can understand why it was included, why it wasn't, et cetera. So I don't think it would muddy the waters. I don't think it serves as necessarily the papers that I was looking for, but I think it's certainly a good aid to those who are creating those. And I don't see any big red checks. I've seen a couple more green checks, but no red X's. So please, I would say put that out, you know, on the mailing list, or perhaps even make it a wiki page where people, you know, can edit, add comments, what have you. In other words, we're not quite using the wiki as a living tool quite as much as we could. Does anybody else have anything on this before we move to discussions of the Brussels meeting? Okay, great. So I'm hoping that we have, by WT2, by the next meeting, that we have something concrete on the table to start, you know, talking about and changing and such. I apologize. I'll only be able to do limited. I'll be traveling all week. Elaine, I see your hand.
Yeah, sorry, I was going to raise that. Basically, I would just like to hear the group's response on the proposal to send out requests from potential applicants and providers identifying what sort of services they might need and what they could provide. If that's okay with everyone, I can go ahead and work on that, get something ready for us to look at next week and approve for sending out. Any objections to that?
I don't see any. Please, people, put your checks and X's. I think it's a great idea to have a draft of something. I think the more people can put something concrete on the table that we can talk about, as long as you're not, you know, terribly tied to it, I think it's a great way to help us move forward. Does anyone disagree? I see no strong disagreement. So, and I see a couple. Okay, that would be helpful.
Okay, I'll do that.
So, okay, thanks. Okay, Olaf, I don't have the schedule in front of me, and maybe it's a question to ask Glenn or someone else who's on the phone call. What do we have scheduled in terms of sessions in Brussels? And once we know that, then we can start talking about what we need to prepare, what we're doing with them.
If I may start,
please.
As a public session, it's now on the just recently published agenda for the Brussels meeting. It's scheduled from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. The public session then for this working group on Wednesday, and it's in this silver room. The general approach would then be that this would be a panel discussion by working group members chaired by Evan and Avery, as moderated by, sorry.
Right. Okay. Yes, we had discussed asking a board member to be a moderator, but then decided that if we could get him to be on the panel as a contributor, it would be much more useful. We need to follow up still on that invitation because I haven't seen it. So one of the things that I think we would need in this, if we're talking about, you know, sort of preparing for it, is someone from both or several someones, and that's what we started talking about in terms of panelists, several people from each of the two working teams to be able to give presentations of some of the ideas that are being generated and worked on. so that those can basically get discussed and reviewed. I'm hoping that, and one of the things we're trying to balance, I think, on this is how much of it is panel and how much of it is getting contributions, feedback, and more ideas from the people that are sitting in the House as opposed to those that are sitting on the stage. Olaf, you still have your hand up. Did I interrupt you?
Not at
Go
all.
Ahead,
I'm just lazy.
Are you mute?
No. No, I'm lazy getting it down. I should have removed it immediately.
Hand it down. Okay. Would anyone else like to comment on this? So basically what we're looking at is having the panelists of some board, some participants, want to make sure that we have some development country participants on the panel. You know, we have development country participants in the group. And basically we just want to sort of air where we are, air the ideas, and get give and take on them.
Avery?
Does that seem like a reasonable idea? Two people.
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
I'm hearing Olaf.
In terms of the meeting, having talked about that, is there anything else to talk about in terms of Brussels? I think one thing there is, okay, Andrew, I see your hand. One thing I think there is that between Evan and I, we will also be reporting to each of ALAC and GNSO, but that won't be a scheduled meeting. Hopefully that'll have a scheduled time slot so that Evan and I know when to show up at each other's meetings or however we end up doing it. We've also had offers of help from some of the other, you know, members of the group that are active in their respective SOSC to help us with that. Okay, I've got Andrew, and then I've got Alex. Andrew.
And Avery, then can you put me in, please? It's Glenn. I'm not on
mute. Are you on mute?
I'm on mute.
Andrew?
Hello, yes. Can you hear me? Hello?
Okay, while waiting for Andrew, Alex, would you like to comment?
Yes, I just want... Alex speaking.
Am I still on the call?
I just wanted to inform the group that there are quite a lot of Africans.
Nicola, can you please speak to that noise?
Am I still connected? Am I still on?
Yes, you are.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to inform the work group that there are a lot of African applicants who are actually collecting their names who would want to be applicants. And I think they'll issue a statement at Brussels. And so, indeed, the interest in application for the new GTLDs from Africa is overwhelming. They're quite a large number. And so the work of this work team will definitely impact on what it is that they...
Okay. I have two people with hands up. I think people still hear me. Does anyone still hear me? I was about to hang up and call back in.
Yeah, we can hear you, but Glenn was trying to get in also.
And I have Andrew and Alex raising their hands.
Avery, can you hear us?
Can you hear us, Avery?
Avery, this is all...
Avery can't hear us, I think.
People saying, can you...
Okay, so we can all hear her, but she cannot hear us. Is that right?
That would seem so.
Okay.
Have I adequately reported back on my statement?
Alex, you were saying that there will be a large number... You believe that there will be a large number of African applicants or potential applicants interested in our session.
Yes, and because they're interested in the new GTLDs, they're actually collecting...
Okay, I can't hear any of you. So, Evan, please take over the call, and I will dial back in.
Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, very well. Yes, I'm just saying there's a reasonable number of African applicants who are expressing their interest in applying, so definitely the work of our work group will impact on what they're interested in. So, indeed, do expect them at Brussels to take a keen interest on our work, on the workshop. Thanks.
Are you specifically referencing the FOSFA mentioned in the emails, or is this something else?
I beg your pardon?
There was mention in some of the emails of FOSFA, the free and open source group from Africa that was interested in this. Is this more than that?
Yeah, there's more than that. That is just one of them. There is another group that is actually collecting names. I'm not involved with that, but I think that's the one I'm actually talking about, with the bigger group. First, I'm quite involved with it, but the other larger group is what I'm actually mentioning about. But FOSFA is only one. but the other ones, there are quite a number.
Okay.
I didn't hear about that section on phone, but I was not on call. Thanks.
Okay, I have Andrew and then Alan. Go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Alex, a suggestion. Given that this falls very, very neatly into some of the work of Working Group 2, perhaps we could speak afterwards to talk a little bit, to maybe do a little bit of market testing with these specific groups that you know are interested. Some of the things that we're trying to determine, they've got, you know, they're a perfect test case, so I think that makes good sense. I would also just a word of suggestion, which is that to the extent that we can make it very, very clear as we're trying to do this in Brussels, that there's a permanent fixed period of time for our presentation and then a brainstorming session. I think that Aubrey mentioned it or suggested it. I think that's really going to be strong. It's something that will get people interested. And my last question is, do we know what we are running up against in terms of our timing? Because I would hate to see us having the same time slot as something where a number of people from our core audience, you know, where we might have competition for the same people that we really, really want to reach.
My quick reaction is, Alex, yes, I'd be delighted to take it offline with you and see what we can test case with them. Thanks.
Terrific. Thank you.
And this is all off. If I just may briefly comment, we have simultaneously, as we have our time slot on Wednesday afternoon, we have Brand Management in the Age of New GTLDs in the big room, the golden room. We have got a CCNSO council meeting. We have an affirmation of commitments meeting, and we have a working group meeting from the GNSO regarding inter-register transfer policy. So it's not as crowded as some other days.
Okay. Avery, this is Glenn.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi. If you would like to give the council an update, may I suggest Sunday afternoon between 5 and 6, because there's an update, working group update to the council at that time.
That works for me. Is that okay with you, Evan?
Yep.
Okay. So I'll add you in that slot. Is that all right?
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. We have 2 minutes left. Sorry for being weird and talking at you while you were all talking. It's very strange. But anyhow, Alan, I think we have 2 minutes left, and you still have your hand up.
It's a very, very quick one. Am I on?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't near my computer during Working Group 2 presentation, so I couldn't easily put my hand up. One of the things I think we need to include in that list of things is information to make it clear to potential applicants what their ongoing responsibilities are going to be. We don't want to set expectations that the only hurdle to get over is the application fee and the application process. And I think when trying to take the names and identify potential applicants, that we set expectations properly so that we don't have people applying who are not going to be able to carry out the ongoing process. And as a complement to that, that we identify the things that will be needed in terms of steady state support to allow some of these to go ahead. It's just a matter of setting aspirations and expectations properly, I think, is very important in making sure that we're doing a good job. That's it.
Managing expectations.
Yep. Thank you. We've made it to the end of our 90 minutes with only a few mishaps along the way. I thank you all for the contributions, and I guess we'll talk again next week, and hopefully we'll have some written work produced between now and then that we can start basically discussing point by point. So, Evan, any last words?
No. Good to go.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.